cybercrime, macroeconomic conditions, ESG reporting. You can't predict the future, but you can prepare for it. By understanding your risk, you can make your business resilient to challenges on the road ahead. What's more, you can turn those risks into opportunities. EY helps CFOs, boards, and audit committees see beyond the numbers to uncover the critical insights that make their organizations resilient, even in an ever-shifting landscape. For more insights that matter, visit ey.com/beyondthenumbers.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Messer and Bloomberg Quick Takes Tim Stenovic on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, our next guest, a well-known investor, innovator, and author, Steve Case, is, of course, the co-founder of America Online, chairman as well, and CEO of Revolution, his investment firm. It backs all kinds of entrepreneurs at every stage of their development. His roughly $1 billion investments in some growth stage companies, you may know them, Sweetgreen, DraftKings, Clear, and more. And he's got a new book out.
The book is called Rise of the Rest, How Entrepreneurs in Surprising Places Are Building the New American Dream. We're pleased to have Steve with us this afternoon in the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio. Steve, it's good to see you.
Great to be with you.
You know, I was commenting to Carol a little earlier that I said, you know, every time I've interviewed you, basically from 2014 to 2020, you were on a bus.
Yeah.
And this is the second time I've gotten to interview you where you haven't actually been on a bus. This book is about the bus tour. Yeah, it really is.
I mean, spending a better part of a decade traveling around the country trying to see what's happening in terms of innovation, entrepreneurship in different parts of the country, meeting hundreds of entrepreneurs, visiting dozens of cities, now making investments in about 100 cities. I was just so fascinated by what I saw and so frankly encouraged by what I saw. I said, I have to tell the story. I have to share these stories. And that's what led me to write the book, trying to really kind of help people understand what's happening, not just in a few places like Silicon Valley, but all over the country, which I think bodes well for the next phase of innovation in this country.
What are we missing by ignoring what's going on in the heart of the country, Steve?
Well, a bunch of things. First of all, some of the biggest industries up for grabs in this next wave, what I call the internet third wave, like healthcare, some of the expertise you need, some of the partnerships you need are in the middle of the country. You know, Mayo Clinic in Minnesota is important. Mm-hmm. Cleveland Clinic in Ohio is important. MD Anderson in Texas is important. Also, for some industries, like the trucking and logistics industry, getting people who understand that business and are in those communities are important. One of the stories I talk about is in Chattanooga is this company called FreightWaves. Kind of mm-hmm. does Bloomberg for trucking and logistics. Well, guess what? I didn't know this till we visited with our bus, but some of the biggest trucking companies in America are based in Chattanooga. So that's actually a better place to be for that business than New York City. Or another one, Acre Trader in Northwest Arkansas, in Fayetteville. The founder actually was working at a hedge fund in San Francisco, decided to move to Arkansas because his business is basically a platform to invest in farmland. And you need to get farmers to put their farms on the platform. Well, he thought it'd be better to be closer to the farmers and therefore in Arkansas. So a lot of these stories that I think surprise people. It certainly surprised me. And I think people reading the book will be equally surprised by how many things are happening in how many different places, most of which you've never visited.
It's not just the East and West Coast, right?
You know what's funny, Steve, is 24 hours ago, Andrew Ginther, the mayor of Columbus, Ohio, was sitting in the seat that you're sitting in right now. And he was basically saying the same thing. Mm-hmm. And he talked about the acceleration of what happened during the pandemic and the way that people moved away from the coast to other parts of the country because they were able to work remotely. You've been doing this and looking at this for the better part of a decade at this point. How did the pandemic change the way that people thought about geographies when it came to innovation?
Well, you're right. It was bubbling for most of the last decade. Every year, every time we did another tour, we would see more progress in more places. But the pandemic was a tipping point. It really was sort of when people took a step back and said, where do I want to live and how do I want to live and how do I want to work, and kind of remote work, hybrid work, things like that led to some people deciding to move someplace else. And instead of just being in San Francisco or just being in New York or just being in Boston, which have been the historical, you know, kind of tech hubs, a lot of people moved to other parts of the country, and attracting that talent is critical to fuel those startup communities. Interestingly, over the last several decades, we've seen a brain drain in this country. Most people in Silicon Valley, over 95% of people in Silicon Valley, are from someplace else. They didn't grow up there. They didn't go to school there. They're from someplace else. They went there because that's where the opportunity was. That's where the capital was. And now we're seeing a slowing of that brain drain of people leaving in different parts of the country, and a little bit of a boomerang of people returning. And Columbus is a great example, a lot of momentum there.
I feel like, too, when we think about what's going on in the middle of the country, I feel like that when I travel or we travel and we get to something other beyond the East and West Coast, like we just get a different point of view, a different perspective. We talk about stress, the importance of diversity of thought, yeah, in terms of ideas. How have you come across that?
Totally. Entrepreneurs at the core see a problem they think should get solved and start a company to solve that problem. Mm-hmm. And you're only gonna see problems based on your experience. And that will include where you're living and the communities that you're interacting with. And a great example in the book is in Indianapolis. There's a mom in a suburb of Indianapolis that a number of years ago was concerned about water quality. This is after the Flint, Michigan water crisis. Yep. Flint's not that far from where she was. She said, I'm kind of worried that, you know, maybe my kids are drinking unsafe water. So she called the water utility, said, I wanna get my water tested. They said, we don't do that for consumers. And if you, we could make an exception, but it costs you like $3,000 or $4,000. She thought that was crazy. So she started a company called 120 Water to test people's water. Initially, it was just for consumers. Now she's actually selling that capability to cities, including San Francisco, to test their water. She would not have had that experience unless she happened to be there and happened to bump into that problem. And that's, again, the dozens of stories in the book are people like that. They just saw something and they said, I'm going to do something about it. And they did it from where they were. They didn't feel like because they weren't in one of the startup hubs, they couldn't really take a shot.
Tim knows I'm obsessed with Shark Tank right now. Yeah. And it does have that quality of what you guys have done. You've done competition, and it just amazes me. It's people like that. Either something happens to a family member, just something in their walk of life, and they're just like, we can figure out a solution to this, and there it goes.
And one of my favorite examples is in Chicago. Eric Lefkowski started a company called Tempest, and the reason he started that was about 7 years ago, his wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. And they talked to a lot of people, different hospitals, and kept getting different opinions. So his wife's life was hanging in the balance, and different people were saying you should do different things. He said, well, this is kind of a data problem. We need to be more precise in what exactly is going on with her situation, and therefore what would be the best possible therapy to help her. Mm-hmm. And that company now has gone on to hire more than 1,000 people, a lot of data scientists coming out of University of Illinois, raised $1 billion. It's a really great company. And it would never have happened if Eric didn't have a wife that was struggling with this disease and was getting differing opinions. So this really is the story of entrepreneurship. It's just part of the reason to write the book is the story for too long has been limited to a few places in Silicon Valley. Mark Zuckerberg, Elon Musk, there's a celebrated tech and entrepreneur. They should be celebrated, but we need to also celebrate the entrepreneurs all over the country that also are doing things in new ways.
I mean, how about your story, starting AOL? You didn't start that in New York or San Francisco.
Yeah, we were outside of Washington, D.C. in Northern Virginia. It was not, by any stretch, a startup hub. There was no venture capital there. It was hard to get people from big companies to join little startup company. So it was a struggle. I think that helps inform my thinking around the rise to rest and maybe passion to make it easier for the next generation of entrepreneurs wherever they are in the country. But for the first decade, it was a struggle. And a couple of times we almost didn't make it. Finally, we broke through, and obviously it ended up being a successful company. But many entrepreneurs in many parts of the country would never take that first step to start a company, or if they did, they wouldn't be able to raise the capital to make it go of it, or wouldn't be able to hire the talent. We've got to change that. Otherwise, we're going to have a even more divided country and probably run the risk of losing what is now a global battle around innovation entrepreneurship.
You have seats at the table where you can help change that. I mean, what is it that needs to be changed? Is it something to do with incentives from the government? Is it something that the private sector needs to do and wake up? I mean, what is it that needs to change so that there's more acknowledgement?
Mostly,
and maybe resources going to this?
Mostly, I think the private sector. There are some things the government has done and some other things government should do. Decade ago, I worked on the Jobs Act to legalize crowdfunding, which helped create some opportunities to raise capital. Just this summer, The legislation, the CHIPS and Science Act, included funding of about $10 billion for regional hubs, which will help support the rise of the rest. So there are some things that happen at a national level, even at a local and state level, that I think are important. But ultimately, it's the people standing up saying, I'm going to create a company. There's something I want to do, some problem I want to solve. I'm going to create a company. And then getting investors to back that company. One encouraging data point, and we got this data last year from a partnership Rise of Rest did with PitchBook. In the last decade, 1,400 new venture capital firms were started in Rise of the Rest cities, meaning outside of San Francisco, outside of New York, outside of Boston. That bodes well for this next chapter, because having some of that local capital is really helpful to these entrepreneurs.
Why is that happening? Are people just acknowledging what's going on in some of these hubs, or what is it? Or is it hard to compete on the coasts for...
Yeah, a bunch of factors, but the core is people recognize this next phase of innovation is going to be a little different, that some of the cities around the country that weren't really part of the innovation economy in the last couple of decades are well positioned, and therefore there's great opportunities to back those companies, and investors want to capitalize on that. So that's the main factor. It also helps that we're starting to see some real breakout successes. A company like MailChimp was acquired in Atlanta last year for $12 billion.
It's real money.
There are a lot of these companies that are starting to scale around the country, go public or be acquired for pretty significant valuations, which lead the investors to say, maybe I should be paying more attention to some of these other places. Somebody out there is making a lot of money. Maybe I should do a little less and have a little more diversification. I'd have all my eggs in the Silicon Valley basket, have other investments around the country.
Are wealth funds in general, like Tim and I talked to so many different wealth managers, and I feel like so much of their investments is looking for kind of some of these startups. Does that help fuel the momentum that's going on, where it might be too pricey for them to get in on some of the deals that are typically led by some of the coastal firms, if you will? Is that part of it?
I think it could be part of it. A lot of the capital is still invested in funds, and as opposed to directly in companies. So getting more funds started in more places, I think, is the best solution. As the companies scale, some of the investors in those funds also look for co-investment opportunities in some of those companies, and we're starting to see more of that. But anything we can do to get more capital in the hands of more entrepreneurs in more places, I think, is supportive of this overall Rise of the Rest effort. Will also help in these communities create more jobs and opportunity, which also, and at least in a small way, could help unite a very divided country. Part of that divide, not all of it, but part of that is this opportunity gap, where some people are doing well and a lot of people feel left out and left behind. How do we give those people more of a shot at the American dream?
It's funny that you say that, because we were talking with the author of a new book out that's about the Proud Boys, and just how there's predominantly white men in the United States who are just so angry and feel like that they've been left behind. And you look at some of the statistics, and when we talk about wealth creation, we know that there have been a lot of individuals left behind. So maybe a way to fix
and it goes back to even the core thesis of the Rise of the Rest book. If 75% of venture capital goes to three states, which is what's happened over the last decade, and a lot of other states, are, including big ones, Texas, Florida, Illinois, Michigan, these are 1% or 2%, then there's fewer new companies started, fewer new jobs being created. Mm-hmm. And some of the disruption on the coast, a place like Silicon Valley, is actually, because of automation, productivity, is actually destroying jobs in many of these communities. That's inevitable. It's going to happen because of new innovation. 100 years ago, 90% of us worked on farms. Now it's 2%. That's because technology allowed you to grow more food with fewer people, which is a good thing if you're trying to efficiently feed the world. The difference, though, is we followed that by backing new companies that created new jobs. And that's what we've missed out on. And that's what we have to address. And that's why I wrote the book. Hopefully that will lead more people to be inspired to start companies, more investors inspired to back those companies, more mayors and governors focused on supporting those companies. And you'll see these startup hubs, not just in one or two cities, but in dozens of cities. That's really what I think will happen.
So, Steve, let's say a recent graduate or somebody in college right now is listening to this interview. And for years, recent college graduates have been told to, go west, go east, go to the big cities. That's where the opportunity is. Give us the top three places where you think this college graduate should consider to move.
Well, I'm reluctant to pick cities because it's a little bit like asking who's your favorite child. We've now visited
that was our next
43
he
cities.
You might head back on those buses.
We have 100 different cities we've invested in. Of course, we're championing all of them. But I think the simple answer, it depends what they want to do. It depends what industry they want to disrupt. But rather than presume they have to go someplace else, maybe they can stay where they are. We've seen the data in the last few years. It's been encouraging that graduates from, say, Carnegie Mellon, which is a great university in Pittsburgh, a decade ago, most went to the coast. Now more are staying in Pittsburgh. We're also seeing that in Ann Arbor. The University of Michigan is also a great university. Many great universities around the country. So rather than presume once you graduate, you have to leave. The opportunity is better somewhere else. The grass is greener somewhere else. Look at in your own backyard. Chances are there are things happening that you can be part of that doesn't require you. And if you choose to move, you know, so be it. But don't presume you have to move. That's what's changed in the last decade. I think anybody reading this book would see that that's really happening everywhere.
Well, in reading your book and just looking over it, it's you had said it's not just about great ideas. And I'm just wondering, what is it as you travel around the country and travel through the Heartland, what is it that says, okay, that has potential, or that individual has potential, or that idea has potential?
Well, some of it, the ideas we're looking for are taking on some of the big aspects of our lives, big industries, with a better way to do it, some new idea that is just a better path forward. So that innovative idea is important. What's also important, though, is the team you assemble around the idea. Sometimes we celebrate the entrepreneur too much, and it's really a team sport. How do you get the right team? So we look at who else is on their team, and we look at for at least early evidence at the early seed stage that there's sort of this product market fit. There actually is some enthusiasm about that idea. So there's a mix of factors, but it starts with having a big idea, but then having the team and a strategy to really capitalize on that idea.
Give us an idea of, something that you passed on in the process of this that has turned out to be really successful, that you look back and say, I wish that was one we would have invested in.
Well, we've passed on a lot of things. Not just with Rise to Rest, I'm not sure. When you do pitch competitions, there's about 100 applicants in every city. 10 end up pitching. We then invest in one. Sometimes we go back and invest in somebody that didn't win. I'll give you one example in Atlanta. A company called Hermias was sort of one of the runners-up, but we were quite taken with it. And basically, it's a company focused on building Mach 5 engines and then jet planes. The Air Force is now a customer. They've gone on to raise significant capital, including from some coastal investors. So even though we initially said no, we turned around a month later and said, we want to get in. And so we did end up investing in that company.
You know, one of the things, I mean, I love talking with individuals like yourself who are in the VC space or in the investment space and just looking at kind of what are the trends and ideas that, I don't know whether it's 5 years from now, 10 years from now, or 20 years, where you make the investment today and it's going to be a big part of the world. How should we be thinking about that? What kind of catches your interest when you think about
it? I think it is the most important aspects of our lives, which I think I wrote the book, previous book, The Third Wave. It talked about the first wave, getting everybody online. The second wave was software on top of the internet. The third wave was going to be the internet meeting the real world. That's the phase we're now in. So I'm talking about things like healthcare, food and agriculture, transportation, financial services, a lot of different things that are being reimagined. So that's the first place to focus. And then recognize that some of the partners you need, some of the expertise you need, is not on the coast. It is in these different parts of the country, and either start there or move there to really capitalize on that expertise. There's a lot of examples of people deciding to move. One, actually, somebody was started in New York City, a company called Temperback we backed. It's focused on sustainable packaging. Styrofoam's terrible for the environment, but people have to keep stuff cold, whether it's food companies or pharma companies. They created a better packaging, and they moved to Richmond, Virginia to launch that company. And just a few months ago, Goldman Sachs led a $140 million round to that company in Richmond, Virginia. So that's an example of looking for a better way and then saying, even though they were in New York or the Acre Trader founder was in San Francisco, saying, is that the best place for me to launch that company? And more situations, we're finding that's not the right answer. And entrepreneurs are going to other places and that's why the Rise of the Rest is accelerating.
One word I didn't hear come out of your mouth yet has been crypto. And the reason I thought of it is because you talked about the first wave and the second wave. And I think a lot of people might hear that and think, okay, well, Web 1, AOL, Web 2, applications on top of that, access to the internet, Facebook, phase 3, wave 3, web 3, crypto in the metaverse. It's interesting that you define that third wave as being something that's real, something that's physical, where the internet actually meets the real world, not necessarily us being transformed into this sort of virtual world.
Yeah, no, I think there are a lot of interesting things bubbling in Web3, which has become a rather large and varied basket of things running from, you know, crypto, Bitcoin, blockchain, NFTs, metaverse, a lot of different things. Some of those will end up scaling and being pretty significant. Others will end up not having the traction that people thought, which is always the case when there's new technologies. And I can relate, particularly on the metaverse point, because we launched the first graphical kind of multiplayer game, kind of a metaverse, a virtual world, over 30 years ago in partnership with Lucasfilm, 35 years ago.
Wow.
It's called Lucasfilm's Habitat. It was for Commodore 64 computers and 300 baud modems. And basically you're walking around living
in
an alternate world.
You know, there's a whole generation
world
that doesn't know what a Commodore is.
I totally know what they don't know. But the point is that things like the metaverse are evolutions of things that were started early, which is, again, always the way it is. So I think there's some really interesting things bubbling in that space. I think that there is a real focus now on what are the things that really are going to scale, and how do you simplify some of these, because a lot of people are confused by the varied options.
So when it comes to something like the metaverse, is it that we really don't quite know what it is, so it's hard to really make maybe a smart calculation or thought in terms of the impact on it longer term?
Well, there's a mix of things. Some of the use cases so far that have gotten traction are obviously in the gaming space, and that can be pretty compelling. We're also seeing, I'm the chair of the Smithsonian, my wife Jane chairs the National Geographic Society. There's some things
that
are being...
joining us tomorrow.
I heard that guest tomorrow. Yeah, Gene Case from Nat Geo and the Case Impact Network tomorrow on Bloomberg Radio.
Well done.
You're hired. So there are some things there that are helpful as well. And there have been also some office applications trying to create virtual meetings that are much more compelling, much more immersive than Zoom has been. So there are a lot of things that are interesting that are bubbling, and the technology is advancing pretty significantly. But I think a lot of people still feel there's a little more work to do to really have
TBD.
Those breakout, killer applications and the technologies that allow you to participate in these virtual worlds without sometimes getting motion sick, for example.
Yeah, exactly.
We're talking to you on a day where the S&P 500, hit a new low, back at levels last seen in November of 2020, down close to 24% for the year. Give us the macro view when you look out of the landscape and what you're seeing right now as far as opportunity. And are you concerned in an environment like this?
No, I was more concerned a year ago when valuations struck me as kind of at sort of unsustainable levels. We actually, at our Revolution Growth Fund, slowed the pace of new investments and accelerated the pace of essentially monetizing some of our existing investment. We just thought after a 13-year bull market, things were a little bit out of hand. So I'm not surprised at least personally, by the reset. The dynamic that I've seen now play out several times is when there is an economic, some economic pressure, big companies tend to move from offense to defense. They look for cost cuts. Often the first things to get cut are some of their long-term innovation projects. Mm-hmm. What that then means is instead of those big companies investing in those, new companies, startups, can basically have more kind of an opportunity to challenge some of the incumbents. So I think this could lead to a flourishing of entrepreneurship in a lot of different sectors. We're just trying to make sure it's done in a much more inclusive way. So rise to rest cities and companies really are the ones that get access to capital and can challenge those big incumbents.
We're talking with Steve Case. When you talk about flourishing, I also do think about geopolitical and, the war in Ukraine and how we're thinking how we have to speed up the move to alternative energy ultimately, because Europe in particular just getting crushed. How do you think about it and how that impacts maybe where you want to invest, particularly climate change, energy, which are going through some major disruptions right now?
Climate is shifted over the last couple of decades from being a problem to solve to being an opportunity to seize. Almost everybody acknowledges there's a real threat there, but rather than just tell people what they shouldn't do, what's happened in the last few years is a lot of entrepreneurs have launched new companies to really deal with it in a much more significant kind of way. So there's a acceleration of investment in what we call climate tech. That will accelerate further because some of the legislation that passed Congress just in the last few months, particularly the built into this Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, was some funding around climate, as well as some of the funding in the CHIPS Act around regional hubs. So those, I think, are both opportunities for an acceleration acceleration of more investment in innovative solutions to deal with the climate challenge. And some of the companies I mentioned, like Tempur-Pak, are angles on that that are really trying to create a more sustainable future. So I think there's now a rush for both entrepreneurs to start companies and investors to back companies because they realize this is one of the great industries of the future.
20 seconds. What should we ask your wife? What should we ask Jean?
Well, she just came off a retreat in Africa with the National Geographic Board in Botswana. First time I think the board had ever done a retreat in a 135-year-old organization. So she might have some thoughts on that. And also, she launched about a year ago the Case Impact Network and a newsletter, yeah, which I'm sure she'll talk about, that's trying to inform particularly young millennial investors about things that they might find helpful.
Well, looking forward to that, and we were so looking forward to sitting down with you. So thank you so much for such an in-depth conversation. Maybe we can get the two of you at some point.
All right, let's do it.
Steve Case, of course, co-founder of America Online, chairman and CEO of Revolution, his new book, Rise of the Rest, How Entrepreneurs in Surprising Places Are Building the New American Dream. This is Bloomberg.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum, powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.